I'm not saying they're about ready to fall, but they need to be dealt with.
Alaska's bridges get a C+ for their structural integrity. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the monitors on two remote Alaska volcanoes come back to life.
What actually happened over the last few weeks is they've started coming back, and so that really means that they were down because the power had failed.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Don't wait to make your home more energy smart. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's Home Energy Rebate Program will reimburse you for energy efficiency improvements. And if you don't have the upfront cash to make the investment, financing is available through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Start saving money and energy today. Sign up at akrebate.com or call 877-257-3228. This message sponsored by AHFC.
An Alaska state trooper shot and killed a Sutton man last night after the man fired a shotgun at troopers who were trying to get him to comply with a restraining order. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says law enforcement officials had been trying to serve a domestic violence restraining order against 58-year-old Theodole Lejeune. In a statement, troopers say they served the domestic violence restraining order on Lejeune through a window about 4:15 p.m. Wednesday. Peter says when troopers returned Thursday evening, they could not get him to cooperate.
They attempted to get Lejeune to come out and contact troopers peacefully. That did not happen. He actually came out of the home. He fired upon troopers, and at that point, troopers returned fire.
Peter says the incident unfolded over a two-day period. After the first attempt to serve the restraining order, troopers withdrew and tried bringing in a crisis negotiator. Other attempts were made to get Lejeune to leave, including having his family members talk to him. All attempts failed, and yesterday troopers returned to the residence with an arrest warrant for Lejeune.
One trooper returned fire and struck Lejeune, and Lejeune did succumb to his injuries and was declared deceased on scene.
The warrant charged Lejeune with two counts of assault, violation of a protective order, and disorderly conduct. Peter says there were no other people in the Lejeune residence during the shooting incident. The shooting is under investigation. A section of Interstate 5 fell into the Skagit River in Washington State yesterday after a truck reportedly knocked into the steel framework. No one died, but the collapse sent cars hurtling into the water. The bridge was built in 1955 and was considered to be outdated by federal standards. In Alaska, there are more than 100 bridges that fall into that obsolete category. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
Alaska has a reputation of dreaming big with its bridges. There's the proposed Kinnick Arm Bridge with its $8 billion price tag, and then there's the Gravina Island Bridge, the $400 million bridge to nowhere that never got built after it became politically toxic. But how is Alaska doing with the 1,000 bridges that it already has? Patrick Natal is the executive director of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and he says that Alaska gets about a C+ on his group's infrastructure report card.
It looks like you're around the national average. You know, the average is about one in four bridges have a concern, and so you're there. That's not a good sign.
Just over 10% of the state's bridges are labeled structurally deficient, which means they need maintenance or potentially replacement. Even more of the state's bridges are considered functionally obsolete, but they don't meet contemporary engineering standards. Natal says that Alaska and the rest of the country has a lot of work to do when it comes to fixing its bridges.
I'm not saying they're about ready to fall, but they need to be dealt with.
Jeremy Woodrow is a spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Transportation, the agency responsible for dealing with that. He says not to worry, Alaska's bridges are safe, but that, yeah, the state's infrastructure could use some improvement. He says that a C grade is about right.
It's a fair grade. It's understandable that infrastructure across the entire country is aging. It's just the nature. You know, a lot of our infrastructure was built up 60, 70 years ago, especially in the state of Alaska. And those bridges are reaching toward, are getting toward the end of their lives.
Still, Woodrow stresses that just because some of these bridges need improvement, not every one of them is a Skagit River Bridge just waiting to happen.
The terms that are used for bridges are oftentimes maybe scary terms to the general public, such as structurally insufficient. Doesn't mean that the bridge is unsafe. It just means that the bridge is nearing a time where it needs to be rehabilitated or replacing. It doesn't mean that it needs to be replaced tomorrow. It just means that that's something that you need to look at and put on your list and make sure that you have a plan to replace that bridge in the near future.
According to a Department of Transportation report, the state needs to put around $60 million into bridge maintenance each year if it wants to keep that infrastructure in decent shape. Woodrow says that his department inspects each bridge in the state every 2 years to figure out which ones need the most attention. They judge them on a 0 to 9 scale, and anything that drops below a 7 gets attention or gets shut down.
If there's ever a cause for concern, we will close a bridge prior to it getting to the point where it could reach failure.
In recent years, there's only been one bridge closure in Alaska due to safety concerns. A bridge along the Copper River Highway near Cordova was closed in 2011 because of erosion around it and remains shut down indefinitely. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Scientists are now able to monitor two remote volcanoes on the Alaska Peninsula after equipment came back to life this spring. KDLG's Ben Matheson reports.
The Pulik Volcano and Ukendrick Mars are located about 70 miles south of King Salmon. Scientists thought that sensors there had died this winter. Jeff Freimuller is a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and is the coordinating scientist for the Alaska Volcano Observatory.
We know that those stations have actually suffered some physical damage. We know, for example, that bears have ripped the doors off enclosures. It looked like they were down and not coming back. What actually happened over the last few weeks is they've started coming back, and so that really means that they were down because the power had failed. Now that the snow is melting and the sun is out, those stations are actually power on power and are actually transmitting data.
It's been decades since either volcano showed signs of activity. The Pulik volcano last erupted in 1814, but radar decades ago showed magma rising to within several kilometers of the surface. Ukendrick Mars has been quiet since only 1977, when the two vents erupted and formed deep craters. Scientists want to know what's happening at the two volcanoes. Freimuller says they rely on that seismic data to provide better early warnings.
Quite often one of the first indications of any kind of volcanic unrest is, small swarms of small earthquakes. So having the network there means that if those things occur, we can see them, and those are likely to be the earliest, among the earliest precursors to potential activity. If the volcano were to actually start to erupt, we would be able to see volcanic tremor and other such signals, just like we're observing right now at Pavlov. We can see that if we have seismic stations close to the volcano, but we can't see it if there's no data from close in.
The observatory is used to remote stations periodically failing, but the network's health has suffered over the past few years. Of the observatory's 200 stations, almost half are out of commission this month.
Something that we're having to start worrying about more and more. This year, I expect that this time next year, we're going to probably see higher percentages of things not working, simply because the amount of maintenance we can do this summer is very limited. So, limited maintenance means more failures down the road.
The network relies on funding from Congress, which Freimuller says has not kept pace with maintenance needs. In Dillingham, I'm Ben Matheson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an elementary school running a club just for girls.
Boys can, push you to the limit, but when girls are there, they don't push you at all.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
A Sitka man and his 14-year-old son are hoping to convince you that genetically modified organisms are bad for your health and for the environment. Agriculture companies modify the DNA of plants that enter the food supply to help them grow faster or bigger. Brett and David Wilcox are channeling their opposition into a demonstration in Sitka this weekend. But as KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, they're also hoping a big journey next year will help bring attention to their cause.
The plan, says David Wilcox, is simple.
We're going to be running across the country.
14-year-old David and his 52-year-old father, Brett, plan to go from west to east across the lower 48.
We're starting somewhere in California, and we haven't really thought of an ending point yet.
Yes, and we plan to run through St. Louis, the headquarters of Monsanto.
That is the older Wilcox, Brett, and he's talking about the agribusiness giant Monsanto. The St. Louis company has become a lightning rod for the debate over genetically modified food. Among other things, it markets modified seeds to farmers. The seeds are patented, and the farmers who keep extra seeds for replanting can find themselves taken to court. That bothers Brett Wilcox, but his bigger worry is about the environmental impact of genetically modified food. He says his spiritual beliefs are opposed to modified organisms, but also that he has unanswered questions about their scientific safety.
We're going to gather seeds from the world, and we're either going to have them in a backpack and we're going to carry them as we cross the country, or if we get so many seeds that we have to put them in a trailer and pull them behind us, we will do that. And those seeds will be the symbol for the run, saying that this is why we are running, this is the purpose. We are here to say that we honor these sacred seeds, and we don't want people messing with them.
In a written statement, Monsanto spokesman Tom Helscher says the company respects the fact that people can have different points of view, but that the safety of genetically modified crops is, as he says, well established. The crops undergo federal review by two, sometimes three, federal agencies. That includes the Food and Drug Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He writes, quote, "Hundreds of studies in the peer-reviewed scientific literature support the safety of GM crops, and there has not been a single substantiated instance of illness or harm associated with their use. The National Academies of Science, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the World Health Organization, and the American Medical Association, among others, have all concluded that GM foods do not pose any more risk to people than other foods," unquote. The history of agriculture is full of developments in technology, things that have increased the amount of food farmers were able to send to plates. Tractors replaced horses, fertilizers boosted crops. But Brett Wilcox says what Monsanto and other companies are doing is different.
What they are producing is not meant to feed the growing population. It's meant to feed cars and cattle. And very, very, very little of the research is designed to do anything that would provide any sort of enhanced nutrition. It's all designed to give them a patent, a legal hold on seeds, so that farmers are then brought into a modern-day slavery system.
Brett Wilcox says farmers have become too beholden to Monsanto, so he and David are preparing for their run.
David has done two half marathons, and he's going to do another half this summer. He'll do his first full marathon this summer for Sitka's inaugural full marathon, so we're excited about that coming up on August 3rd.
Brett is 52, and he also runs marathons, although he says he did not come to running until his 40s.
I kind of grew up with the belief that that I didn't have the heart to run, and I found out that that's not true. I do fine running. I enjoy it. So I've done a couple of marathons, helps keep me relatively sane.
The two Wilcoxes plan to leave on their journey sometime in January. They estimate it will take about 8 months. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Wilcox is calling a Saturday demonstration in Sitka the March Against Monsanto. It coincides with similar events around Alaska and the world. A Alaskan singer-songwriter Marion Call has a new album out called Marion Call Live in Europe. The album grew out of an enormously successful Kickstarter campaign that raised more than $60,000 and sent her to Europe to perform and record a new album. Now she's finishing up a statewide tour and about to set out to play music in the Western Lower 48. KMXT's Brianna Gibbs caught up with Call before her Kodiak performance and learned more about her Alaska-inspired music.
I grew up in a family that was all about music. My dad was a band conductor, choir conductor, church music director, pianist, wedding musician, everything. And my mom did most of those things with him as well. And she was a fantastic songwriter. And my brother plays the trumpet and the banjo and the accordion, and my sister plays the cello. And we all just, we grew up with a strong musical community around us, a lot of our family friends. We're going nowhere if we. And then I went off to study, and I studied hard. I studied music for a long time, and I didn't have so much what felt like a community then. It was more of a professional pursuit, with the exception of choir. Choir was the absolute best. But aside from that, as I studied sort of composition and orchestration and things like that, it was much more individual and sort of alone. And I decided, actually, by the time I was done with college, that I was not interested in being a musician. I didn't think I was very good at it. I didn't think I wanted that life. I couldn't see any jobs that I could have. A speck like me, fast and free, that's how. Then I moved to Alaska while I was still in college, actually, and I assumed there was nothing for me to do up here. And I was so wrong, because the more I stayed up in Anchorage and began to listen to the music that was both being performed in Anchorage by visitors and by people who lived there, the more I realized that that was sort of a return to the community feeling I had about music growing up.
What sent you up here to Alaska? What pushed you to come to the last frontier?
Oh, I was dragged. I was married at the time, and my husband found a job up here, and there was no work anywhere else in the country for him at the time. It was rough. He was in aviation, and that was right after September 11th. At one point, he called me and said, look, we can move to Wichita, or we can move to Alaska. And I was like, I think I'll take Alaska, please. Although I wasn't too excited about either prospect, honestly, because I wanted to live in Seattle or Portland or New York or LA or San Francisco or somewhere where I thought I could have sort of a music career. And I'm so glad that things turned out that way, because I fell sort of deeply in love with Alaska very quickly.
Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl. I wish that I could hold my beer.
So I have a lot of songs about how deeply I love Alaska, and also songs about sort of the bleakness and about addiction and about how dark it can be sometimes.
It's raining, but it wants to snow. I'm staying, but I ought to go, but it's cold out.
It's challenging to tour. It costs so much. If I could take a band, I would, but I honestly don't know how people who are taking a band are doing it right now, because the money situation in music is changing so much right now. As for me, it's a lot simpler and easier and more flexible to just be me and a guitarist on the road. So like my guitarist Jordan Schindel is coming down to play the show with me here in Kodiak, and he and I will go to Kenai after that, and to Talkeetna after that. Some of my favorite communities.
Oh, to be a scow girl in the last frontier, where chicks run the Iditarod and win it.
The point of it, as I've gone on, is to try to keep it feeling like a community thing more than a sort of personal, professional pursuit.
That was KMXT's Brianna Gibbs talking with singer-songwriter Marion Call.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The Alaska Energy Authority encourages you to renovate right this spring. Alaskans spend up to 50% of their income on energy. For energy-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lauren Rosenthal. This week on AK, running. To a lot of us, running seems like work, or at least exercise. But for a group of girls in Sitka, running is actually pretty fun. They're part of an after-school program that combines running with important life lessons. KCAW's Anne Bryce has the story.
Nakia Brazel is 10 years old and loves to run.
It feels really fun, and sometimes when you get to run with your friend, you have fun, you get to laugh.
But she hasn't always been into running. She started liking it a lot more when she joined Girls on the Run last year.
Go, Lorena!
It's a national program that began in North Carolina in 1996. It was created to inspire girls to be confident and healthy through running. Girls on the Run got its start in Sitka 5 years ago. Every spring, girls in grades 3 through 5 meet twice a week at Keet Gushihin Elementary. Nakia says running with a group of only girls makes her feel safer.
Boys can, push you to the limit, but when girls are there, they don't push you at all. Like, you know how they throw the balls sometimes at you? Girls don't do that.
The ultimate goal of the program is to decrease domestic violence by giving girls tools that help build their self-esteem, making them less likely to become victims later in life. There are 24 practices, and each one teaches a different lesson. It might be how to stop bullying or resist peer pressure. Kim Johns is Nakia's coach and is leading today's lesson.
One very powerful idea that we are going to talk about today is the power we have to choose our friends.
The game encourages girls to choose friends who celebrate who they are just the way they are. Kim reads positive and negative messages like,
"Wow, that report you did was awesome!"
Woo-hoo! Or,
"Oh my gosh, you can do better than that!"
And depending on the type of message, the girls either run in a circle with a bounce in their step, or slowly drag their feet. At practice, Nakia is a bit quieter than a lot of the girls, and she says her favorite activity is an introspective one.
Well, we tried running silently, and it was kind of hard for some girls, but I tried it and I started liking it.
She says the exercise gives her quiet time to think about what she wants to do and who she wants to be when she grows up.
I thought about working as a teacher. Yeah, I also want to learn how to speak Tlingit, because I already know the Pledge of Allegiance in Tlingit.
Brian Sparks is a domestic violence prevention specialist at the women's shelter in town, Sitkins Against Family Violence, or SAFE. He organizes the local branch of the program and says he hopes Girls on the Run will help change social norms on a bigger scale.
They spread these lessons, let's say the not gossiping lesson. Well, okay, so now if somebody who's not in Girls on the Run, starts to gossip, there's a critical mass of girls who have attended Girls on the Run who don't accept that behavior anymore.
On a recent Saturday, all the girls' hard work is put to the test. They're running a 5K to celebrate the end of the season. They choose running teams and pose for a group photo.
Want to head over for the group picture?
Let's go, Nakia, Lorena!
Nakia ran the 5K last year and says that even though it was hard, she was proud that she set a goal and she stuck to it.
Ready?
Three, two, one, run! Woo!
This year, she did even better. She says she plans to keep running and wants to become a Girls on the Run coach someday. For AK, I'm Anne Bryce.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to Anchor Point, a small community 14 miles north of Homer on the Kenai Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Bobby Neff. I've been in Anchor Point since 2003. Anchor Point's kind of a quiet little community. It's kind of a retired, it seems like it's a little bit of a retired community, but there's a lot of workers down here too. The Senior Center and the VFW are some of our big things that we do events with and just have different programs with and everything. Anchor Point does have a hotel. It's got some bed breakfasts around here. So it's a great little community to come visit. It's good for fishing. There's a Anchor River Inn is a great fishing area. We have camper grounds down there and boat launch down there. Yes, we do have a beautiful view of the mountains. It's kind of cloudy today, but on a clear day, you can see the volcanoes. People go fishing. We have bingo. We have different activities at the VFW and the Senior Center. Senior Center, we have bingo, and we have dinners, meals like different things. Thursday night dinners, breakfast once a month, and special occasions. I love living here because it's just a nice little quaint, quiet community. Yes, we do have summer people, but the wintertime is very quiet. But it's just a nice community. Everybody is friendly. I don't know of any strangers around here. Everybody seems to be, you know, everybody gets along and we have a lot of good times together.
Bobby Ness lives in Anchor Point. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Ann Bryce, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had a correction tonight. APRN misidentified attorney Ken Schoolcraft as Ken Schoolacre in yesterday's story about the Kulik hearing. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Dillingham, Ed Ronco in Sitka, and Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.